You're listening to the Legion of Reason.
Okay.
Hello.
Okay, so we'll move on into part two of episode 200. Let me just do.
That's a pretty big milestone, huh? We should be celebrating.
We should be celebrating. Okay. Well, let's celebrate.
200 up.
Yeah, celebration. 200. 200th episode. Sort of. Yeah. So that's our celebration.
You sound like you're trying to shut down a talk.
We're celebrating the 200th episode. Yay. And we're going to continue on with a bunch of stories. Dorian, he was obviously pretty animated while doing that. You could hear it. It must be very upsetting. It would piss that. Well, people would know, anybody that knows me knows that I get really pissed off with that stupid definition of racism that's come out of the postmodernist social sciences. It's unbelievable.
As a theoretical construct, it's useful, but as a I've made the comparison before between Jonathan Swift's A Modest Proposal, the essay. It's a thought experiment. It's not meant to be taken and enacted in the real world. People don't go around eating children, right? Because, they're impoverished. And same with that I can't remember the name of it, that piece by Peter Singer, right? Where he basically said, well, let's all agree not to reproduce, just party on and let the world restore to its environmental balance or whatever, stop messing up the environment. I'll just agree to die off. And people were outraged by that as they were by Smith's A Modest Proposal. And it's like, oh my God, you're missing the point. It's a thought experiment. It's not supposed to be carved in stone.
Yeah, exactly. It's used as a weapon. Not advocating death camps and people just don't chill. They act before they think. That's especially true for social justice activists. It's getting to the point where it's basically a caricature of itself.
Yeah, it's a commitment to your pet theory. That's kind of
with extreme emotional investment and motivated reasoning.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I really don't think there's much skepticism. Even the people that call themselves skeptics that go into social justice, I really don't see it.
There's a range, right?
Well, I haven't seen any.
It's just, you don't hear the quieter people, that's all.
Well, they're quiet.
It was in the last place I looked for it.
Yeah, exactly, between the seat cushions.
No, because obviously they're afraid to speak out.
Sure, absolutely.
Gaston talks about this.
Yeah. The Ostrich Brigade, Okay, well, what do we want to talk about first? Down under, there's Ion Hersiali cancels her Australian tour, citing security concerns. Do we want to start there?
Sure.
Yeah. Sure, you want to start there? I'll bring it up on OBS here. There we go. So this is from The Guardian, I love this. Controversial speaker blames cancellation on a succession of organizational lapses. That's a quote by the event organizer. So Ion Hersiali canceled her tour to Australia at the last minute, and one might think that this was because she was getting a lot of pushback from militant Islamists. I don't know that for sure, but shall I play this? There's this Ion Hersiali, You Don't Speak For Us. Have you played a little bit of it, I guess?
Well, the violet in the cop, I don't think anybody's paying attention to us anyway, but as long as it doesn't make us violate copyright laws.
Well, it's fair use. We're talking about this. Video unavailable. Yeah. What do you mean video could not be played? You just started playing it, you stupid thing. Whatever. Okay, we can't play it, unfortunately. Apparently, Ion Hersiali doesn't speak.
Try it on YouTube or something.
Yeah. Let me see if I can pull it up in here. Come on. Anyway, say something while I'm doing this.
What shall I say?
Ion Hersiali.
Spring is here and the days are longer.
That's not about Ion Hersiali. That's not about Ion Hersiali.
I wonder what's really going on here, because what's being said versus what's, behind the scenes is, I guess, there's official statements and then there's speculation.
Okay,
who knows?
Okay, here it is. I got it now.
Ayan Hirsi Ali, you do not speak for us.
You do not speak for us.
You don't speak for us.
You are not our ally.
You're not interested in our lives or our freedom.
Says the woman in the hijab.
You've described Muslim women as being irrational.
Docile? Having no minds of our own.
You've called us slaves.
Well, you're
How
wearing
can
a hijab.
How can you claim to stand for our liberation?
When you simply repeat the language of our oppressors. This is not the language of solidarity or understanding or freedom.
This is the language of patriarchy and misogyny.
Okay, let's just stop that because it gets just kind of making
me
ill.
I know the irony meter is just...
Yeah, like, I know. This is just... Here are these people wearing hijabs or worse, and they say, oh, you're not speaking for us. You're not speaking the language of freedom.
You're speaking the language of patriarchy.
Yeah, whatever. Patriarchy. There are patriarchies, but they happen to be religions, including Islam, okay?
Yeah.
You know, Islam is extremely patriarchal, just like Catholicism is. You know, when you know, social sciences students talk about patriarchy, they're talking about something that I don't think exists, but not in the general society, but certainly religions can be patriarchal. And some societies are patriarchal. You know, if you go to places like Saudi Arabia, certainly, Kuwait, Qatar, United Arab Emirates, places like that, Yemen, oh gosh, mm-hmm. Yemen. Those places are patriarchy. You want to see a patriarchy, you know.
Well, that's not to say there's not, you know, look at what's going on in the States with reproductive rights and crap like
well,
that.
Well, that's more the religious, not, you know, again, that's religious though. That's religion. That's religion based.
Well, and where do you think patriarchy comes from?
It comes from a society dominated by men. It doesn't need to be religious.
Same phenomenon, unfortunately, you know, like at this, the two come up with the same results through the same lens, essentially, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You can have a non-religious patriarchy.
Oh, for sure. I'm not saying that it's necessarily tied, but the two are, you know, two concepts that explain, you know, the same phenomena.
Yeah.
And sometimes the two explain it in exactly the same way.
So that's... unfortunate for our friends down under, and it's too bad. Ayan Hirsi Ali knows from whence she speaks. She escaped an arranged marriage and escaped Islam, escaped a very extremely patriarchal society in Somalia. And yet, so many feminists, I just don't understand this, feminists that are apologists for Islam, it just amazes me. I don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand.
Yeah.
But what do you do, right?
Yep. Well, talk about it, I guess, right?
Well, here's another
whether
thing.
The criticism, if you get called names.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. And yeah, words apparently, was it Lalo Dagach was saying, apparently violence is the belief that sticks and stones and words break bones.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, it's crazy.
You know, the word violence has become to mean things that it just isn't. Oh, he didn't call me by my preferred pronoun. That's violent. No. No. Yeah. Anyway, so this is from...
I guess the word offensive didn't cut it anymore, right?
Yeah, offensive. And again, I really couldn't care less if somebody's offended by that. But I just don't. This Muslim politician nailed why the Islam is not a race argument doesn't work. No, she didn't. Islam is not a race, and it's still not a race even after she said this.
Yeah.
There's anti-Muslim bigotry, sure, absolutely. But it's not racism because I've met Muslims whiter than me, and I don't think that they're people of color.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's just like being Jewish. You don't have to be born in Palestine to be Jewish. And what was this person's name? It's in Australia. Last week, Labor's
Dr.
Anne Alley sparked conservative outrage as Parliament debated reforming Australia's Racial Discrimination Act by suggesting a tax aimed at Muslims should also be covered under law. They are. It's called assault. It's not racism. Get over it. This is BuzzFeed that's promoting this, right?
It ties in a little bit too, right? Because I think there's been acts of, you know, people look at somebody in a turban and kill them because they think they're Muslim.
Yeah, isn't that just amazing? They're Sikh.
Like
yeah,
that, right? Like,
I know.
But this rednecks. Conversation isn't helpful.
No,
it's lies. You know.
Yeah, it's like the whole Islamophobia thing that's you know, Motion 103. And by the way,
isn't there a pretty good healthy population of Black Americans who are Muslims too, like from the Malcolm?
Oh, hell yes. Yeah, yeah.
Like, well, I don't know
if it's healthy, because a lot of them are very close to being, we're close to being terrorists in the 70s and 60s.
I guess I shouldn't say healthy. I meant
exactly.
A large population.
Yeah. Yeah, there are a lot, many Black Muslims. Malcolm X, of course, being the obvious example.
Yeah, Black, white, brown.
Louis Farrakhan is a still living example.
The religion.
Neither which I really revere at all. So this is way to go. This is not a person I'm really going to have much agreement with. But at least she's not wearing a hijab, you know. Well,
no, I noticed that. Yeah.
Yeah, funny that.
I often say, people that purport to speak on behalf of others, and here I go and do it myself sometimes too. But then, you know, I'll get messages on Facebook and stuff, people saying, well, thanks for saying that, because I actually can't speak out, or I'm, you know, putting my life in jeopardy and that kind of thing, right? So very rarely women, because it must be even that much more risky.
Yeah.
You know, and men who want to stand up for the rights of women in places that one might think are patriarchal societies, there's undercurrents it's obviously really hard to make changes in a society where your life is threatened.
I was watching
this bullshit doesn't help. It doesn't help, you know, those communities.
I was watching a really good movie last night. Loving. Have you heard of it?
No.
I wanted to see it because it had Ruth Negga in it, and she's really an excellent actress. It's about the first, it was an interracial couple that got married in Washington, D.C., and they were arrested for sex outside of, you know, interracial sex. And because Virginia, the state of Virginia at the time, didn't recognize interracial marriages. And so it's about their life. As you know, they're told that they have to leave Virginia for 25 years and not come back.
Unbelievable.
The reason the judge gave eventually was because God made blacks and whites, and the two will never mix, right? And it's only been because of man screwing things up and traveling that it could possibly, you know, interracial marriage could happen. They were basically screwing up God's perfect creation. And the Supreme Court came back and, of course, said, yes, marriage is an inherent right, and you don't get to tell anyone who you can or cannot marry. So, which, of course, is the same exact reasoning that was used in same-sex marriage from the Supreme Court. And yeah, it was a very good movie. I really liked it. But it was infuriating because the husband, it's not because of the... not just because of the issue at hand, but it's also the character of the husband drove me nuts, because he's actually more antisocial than I am. And it was like, didn't like him. But I hope he's not like that in real life for the actor. But it was really an interesting story. And eventually it has a happy ending, sort of. And yeah, but anyway,
was that released?
It was released late last year. And only when it didn't make the big theaters. It was in some of the smaller ones in the city. But I really like it. It's on Shaw right now, so I can pull it up.
Okay.
So anyway, this is enough of Dr. Anne Alley. And it's just like that whole Islamophobia thing. The same thing.
Yeah.
Cut it out.
And you posted something today about Canadian Muslims against that motion, hey?
Yeah, there was I don't know what you'd call it. It was a little meeting, looked like, what, 100 people, 150 maybe?
Mm-hmm.
Tariq Fatah put the video up. And it was Tariq Fatah, is that his name?
Who's that?
He's a Muslim here in Calgary, I believe. Oh, no, Toronto, sorry.
Okay.
Trying to remember his name. Let me see if I can find it here. Come on. Tariq Fatah.
Okay.
He's a prominent Muslim in Canada. So this was Muslims Against Motion 103. So there are people who understand, you know, these people actually are immigrated or are refugees from basically hardcore Islam. So they know that criticizing Islam is, you know, they understand the value of criticizing religion. So, and especially,
exactly, that's why they escaped it, you know.
Yeah. That's why they're here. You know, they're not economic migrants.
They
understand the value of free speech, even if a lot of people who have grown up here don't. It's like that. It's like that eco-stress thing I posted. Oh, my God. This woman who was finding it hard to sleep, she was stressed out all the time, and her worrying about, oh no, what's going to happen to my kids if global climate change means that these apartments are going to be underwater. And so I'm like, God, lady, you really have a hell of a first world problem. You know, you can be concerned for the state of our, the ecology without going overboard and paralyzing yourself or worse.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I couldn't believe this. This was actually a thing. You know, it's like, well, they talked about PTSD being caused by this, right? And I remember we had this issue with Melody Hensley saying that she had PTSD and how much, we thought that it was kind of, people who have real PTSD, people who had, friends blown up in Iraq, that kind of thing. And I realized what the difference is. The difference is, you can work yourself up into a lather in both cases, but one is self-inflicted and one is inflicted upon you. I've got a lot of sympathy for people who's had no control over anything and something was inflicted on them. Trauma was a result of something that they had that wasn't through no fault of their own. But when somebody goes online, gets supposedly PTSD, it's your own damn fault. I'm sorry. I can't think of it any other way. It's your own damn fault. Yes, you have to deal with the outcome. But my goodness.
Yeah, I think it's kind of more like a spectrum, right? PTSD and I don't know what to say about that. I don't want to shit talk, but
we talked about this once a long time ago, and there's a difference between working yourself up into a lather, which you can do, and you can stress yourself out.
Yeah,
but whose fault's it? I mean, you've got to look at it. There's a difference between those two things.
Fault so much as how do you reinterpret your response to the stimuli?
Well, that's the thing. You have a choice in how you respond to something, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, as much choice as you have.
It's a lot easier to respond to shitty talk on the internet than it is to seeing somebody blown up in front.
Well, yeah, exactly. Exactly. There's a big difference between those two. I wonder if this is one thing that wasn't addressed in CBC's The Current. And I'm going to post it up here on the YouTube. So here we go. The experiencing eco-anxiety report suggests link between climate change and mental health. It's one thing for the Inuit. I mean, whose culture is being directly affected by climate change. That's a very different case. But somebody who's in New York, and this is the example that was given, was this producer in New York, and she was stressed out and suffering symptoms of PTSD. She sought treatment, and
I think, like, for example, when people are experiencing depression, they're sometimes advised just to not watch the news for a little bit of time, right? Because I think that can be a real downer on people. I don't know that it would be necessarily post PTSD, but I can understand where, if you're overloading yourself on nothing but, bad news every day, it's going to get you down, isn't it? Right?
Yeah, I think that's why we're seeing this. I've noticed in the last 6 months, at least on CTV News, that there's a lot more stories that are upbeat. The only problem is that they're completely unnewsworthy.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah.
And I'm just like, why is this on the news? Why is this on the news? And, unfortunately, that's the nature of the beast. Things that have the most impact on us. And notice I didn't say impactful. That drives me nuts. Because people are using that word impactful now. It's so impactful on me. I'm like, no. Don't ever say that. It's a pet peeve. And it has quite a bit of an impact on the general population. Those things tend to be things that aren't good.
Yeah.
Well,
look at Trump and how,
Well, exactly. Right.
Tweeting
Trump's tweets,
Well, yeah. Yeah.
Our tweets
and
news.
People are upset and they're depressed and they're obsessed with, and I can understand it. It's really quite shocking. Right.
It's quite shocking, but come on.
Head down at the end of the day and be thankful for some stuff too.
The world hasn't ended yet.
Yeah.
And so
take a dose of, the good with the bad. Try and balance it out.
Then there's this story. This is a CBC report. I wish we had Twyla here. Twyla's not on tonight because she's very, very tired.
Yeah.
It's a report on the totally unhealthy our alliance between the Alberta government and Pure North, which is trying to force its vitamins on to very vulnerable populations, the homeless, seniors, addicts, and pushing very high levels of vitamin D. And vitamin D can be quite toxic at high levels. Well, we'll get to that in a second. This is the Pure North founder, Alan Markin. He's the one that's pushing this, and he also is a part owner of the Calgary Flames NHL franchise. And he got together with the Alberta government and for $10 million to fund these programs for giving vitamin. I mean, I totally believe he's well-meaning, but the problem is, of course, that these heavy doses of vitamins have not been shown to do anything. And basically, these are experiments on people without any ethical oversight.
Well, no, because overdoses of too high of vitamin D has been shown to be damaging, right?
Well, true, but no,
they haven't shown to do nothing.
Well, true, but the claim is that it would improve the health of people. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, high doses of vitamin D can cause calcification of organs and isn't good for when your heart starts being calcified. It's a big problem in infants, it can be a problem in the elderly. Because elderly take vitamin supplements combat osteoporosis. So the CBC has been finding this out, and there were a lot of warnings raised within the Department of Health. For instance, James Talbot, he was the chief medical officer of health in Alberta in December 2014, and he basically said that, here's a quote, "Without supporting documentation from peer-reviewed scientific literature and a detailed list of what will actually be done in the clinics, it is impossible to judge the possible outcomes, likely effectiveness, or risks to patients and the funder should things go wrong." In other words, the Alberta government would be on the hook. He said, "As such, it is essentially a human clinical trial conducted without peer review or ethics approval." And I know that Tim Caulfield also weighed in on this and said, quote, they were basically providing unproven therapies on sort of an experimental basis on the belief, the faith that this stuff would work when in fact the scientific literature didn't back it up," unquote. And the Dietitians of Canada have come out as well, condemning this whole thing. Jane Thirsk, who is the director of Dietitians of Canada, said, "Pure North's belief seems to be that vitamin supplements are good for everyone, that more is better, and there is no such thing as too much. And we know that simply isn't true. We know that too much vitamin A can cause liver toxicity. If you take too much vitamin A in early trimesters of pregnancy, it can cause birth defects. Too much iron can cause liver failure." You know, it goes on and on. I mean, of course, I've already talked about vitamin D. And she said, "Nutrients in high doses can actually act like drugs and have pharmacological side effects that can be toxic and harmful." Of course. But the Stephen Carter, who's the spokesman for Pure North, said that, quote, "This is not an experiment. This is a measure of efficacy," unquote. Okay.
That's a nice use of bullshit.
Yeah, there's a lot of other stuff in here, and these things are still being funded. I wanted to go to, there's been safety concerns raised and letters from Health Canada sent. They used drugs or vitamins that didn't have a proper label on them so that it wasn't an approved product.
Handed them out at food banks, like
and food banks in Vancouver.
A vulnerable population.
Yeah,
like I'm sorry, they're guinea pigs, is what they are.
Yeah, this is
rhetoric. Right? Oh, it's not. You know, it's just a freaking experiment on the vulnerable.
Yeah, this is straight out of the X-Files. You know, like expect the smoking man to come in here and help.
There's a reason why we have ethics in research, and you know, I'm not going to go into details about the context from which that emerged, because I'll just be invoking Godwin's law. Really, you know.
Well, this is how much vitamin D they want these people to take. Okay, the recommended dietary allowance per day is 600 units, and the maximum, the maximum tolerable intake level is at 4,000 units. Those are set by Health Canada. Now, if you look at what Pure North wants to do, they want you doing 6,000 to 9,000 units a day, and they set the upper limit at 20,000 units. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah. And the visual, you know, I know you're speaking here, but I recommend people go online and look at the visual because it's quite shocking.
Well, if you're on YouTube, right? You can see this right now. But if you're not, why aren't you? Okay. Yeah.
I'm scrolling through the article, so.
Yeah. So there was an original review, an ethical review. And let's see, that I'm going to read this whole thing. They sent it in the original letter by Williams and Taylor. I can't remember who those two guys are. But anyway, they also said there was no high quality evidence to support the removal of. Oh, yeah, that's the other thing they were doing. They were removing mercury fillings from people and then sending them to get chelation therapy. I mean, that's dangerous. That's just dangerous.
Remind me of what chelation therapy is.
Well, basically, it's something that you use to take toxic metals out of the body. And so this is the only treatment that's available for people who actually really have suffered mercury poisoning. There's no such thing with fillings. It doesn't exist. An ethical review of the proposal to determine its appropriateness in terms of the approaches, agents, doses, and other key components of the Pure North program and the program as a whole is required. So, in other words, they needed to have oversight and basically ethical approvals for doing these programs of distributing vitamins. Over a year, they discussed the funding of a research project. Okay, and that would require stringent ethical oversight. But internal documents show that on December 17th, 2013, 6 days before then Health Minister Fred Horn signed the funding agreement, the grant's stated purpose was changed from a research project to simply an expansion of Pure North's already existing seniors program. So in other words, they circumvented the requirement for ethics by paper pushing.
Yeah,
this is just this sleazy, sleazy stuff. And some of the most vulnerable people are being affected here.
I just find that utterly shocking and immoral and
it is
shameful, you know. Yeah.
And no reason for that change in the paperwork is ever given. And not only that, but Pure North was granted access to Alberta Health Services patient data. Talk about a violation of privacy. That's a big thing. Yeah. It's just so no ethical oversight on any of this, and it was just rubber stamped. And it's still going on with the current NDP government. So I hope maybe something's coming of this. I don't know. And, by the way, I found a website. I'll put this up for people. If they want to go and have input on natural products and their sale, there's already been one in Saskatoon and Vancouver. That was a few days ago. But they'll be in Yellowknife on the 20th of April, Montreal on the 24th, Halifax on the 28th, May 2nd and 3rd. They will be in Toronto, May 5th. There'll be a webinar. So no Calgary stop off. I have no idea why or why not.
Is there some online way to offer?
Yes. It's on May 5th. That's a webinar online.
Okay. Cool.
So, there you go. I urge everybody to get out there and say, hey, just get the stuff off pharmacy shelves. A waste of people's money. What do we want to do? The Black Lives Matter?
Well, we have
a
couple of rants, don't we?
We have a couple of rants at the end, is there? You want to do Conrad Black first?
Can I quickly get a wine refill?
Sure.
I'm sorry.
Sure. All right.
Okay, thank you. Fill the air time again. That's a problem when there's only like two hosts, right?
Yeah. You have to talk more. You can't be a waffler.
Well, that's what I was going to say to Doran. Hey, can you stick around for 5 minutes? But then I thought that might not be appropriate. But yeah, okay. I'll be right back. Sure. Hang on.
Okay. Well, I'll just do a little song and dance while Chris is getting her wine glass filled. I've spent the weekend drinking sangria myself. So really, really nice sangria. As what you do is you take a couple of pounds of strawberries and slice them up, put them in a large pitcher. This takes more than a usual size of pitcher, and slice a lemon and put that in the pitcher, and then dump in a bottle of white wine and a cup of white rum, and then you add 3 cups of lemonade. So then you fill, I would do this in a tumbler, not in a wine glass, but put in a bit of the fruit after it's been refrigerated for 4 hours or so. Go about 2/3 of the way with the sangria mix, and then top it up with some champagne. And boy, is that ever good. I really like, even without the champagne, it's actually really good. And so that was pretty much my weekend. Makes a lot of sangria. It takes a long time to drink it down. But it's very nice. What else did we do? Well, we did watch the movie last night. And of course, Fridays are our Mystery Science Theater 3000 days. We watch a really bad movie. All right, you're back. Good.
Sorry.
I was running out of stuff.
Code word was...
I was running out of things to say. Okay. So we got two last stories here. One is Conrad Black going off the rails again. And the other is a Black Lives Matter story, sort of. Which one do you want to go?
Yeah. Teen accepted to Stanford after writing hashtag Black Lives Matter 100 times on an
exactly 100 times. That's the thing. I don't know what the significance of that is, but it was exactly 100 times. So basically, it was part of the entrance requirements for Stanford is to do an essay. And the question was, what matters to you and why? And this guy wrote Black Lives Matter, the hashtag, exactly 100 times. And now, again, I do not know what the significance of 100 is, but I don't care.
It just takes a word quota, I suppose.
Oh, maybe. You know, some people thought, well, this is he took a chance and it worked.
It's ridiculous. I think it opens up sets a bad precedent, right?
Well, I think he didn't answer the question why.
Yeah. Well, it's incomplete. Just lazy. I'm sorry. It's just lazy.
Yeah, this is a stunt. Could you imagine a grant application and you did this?
Yeah, exactly.
I also think it's a threat.
But, you know, I watched my daughter do an application for art school and the stress and time she put into, you know, a 500-word essay on a question very similar to this. And this bullshit makes the cut. You know, granted, my daughter got in, but she didn't polish. Yeah. Stunned.
Well, you know, he obviously had the marks. I mean, you don't apply Stanford. Yeah. This is just a stunt. And I also think a threat to the university because I can't believe that it didn't go through the selection committee's mind that what if we reject this guy? What's the potential damage if he goes public, right? Oh, look, I wrote Black Lives Matter. They didn't accept me. Therefore, they must hate Black Lives. I mean, we've seen a lot of that kind of thinking going on. It's BS. It's unnuanced. It's crap. So congratulations for getting in. But I'm not too thrilled. He's a student activist, of course, et cetera. Oh, and of course, Linda Sarsour.
Oh, God. Tweeted. I saw that. Yeah.
Always making us proud, Black Lives Matter. Yeah. Ugh.
We should, just in case the audience doesn't know who she is, she's a...
they should by now.
She helped organize a women's march, and she's pro-Sharia law.
Pro-Sharia law, and of course, very pro-hijab, and she was getting people, white people like Chris here, to try on the hijab. Freedom hijabs. Yeah.
Like who? People like who?
You.
I didn't try.
No, but you weren't there.
I
know.
I wouldn't try on
no,
a hijab.
No, I'm just implied that you're white. You're a cracker like me.
I am so offended. You have totally triggered me.
Nah. That's just right. You trigger me all the time.
No, and I keep saying good.
This is just revenge.
Okay, it's like fetishizing it. It's fetishizing the symbol of oppression.
Totally. Well, there was that video that I posted on the Facebook page, which everybody should go to and like, and you'll get lots of updates on stuff that doesn't make the cut on this podcast, but it's still interesting.
Yeah. And discussions go around.
And this is one of them. It was, it came through Jerry Coyne, because I don't go to Rebel Media, ever. I've never been there. And so somebody sent Jerry Coyne the link and it was a very good video, on why fashion modesty is wrong. And so go to the Facebook page and find that. I posted 5 days ago. A very good video. But so even, this is the thing, and I also said this, and somebody asked me, not really asked me, but it was an implied question, why do I get to put so much stuff up from Heat Street? Well, the reason for that is because, and we've seen it when we asked or talked with Dorian in the last hour, that mainstream media stays away from stories that might run against the leftist narratives. CBC definitely does that. Sargon put up an interesting video this past week on that on CBC. And so a lot of these stories don't ever get any exposure except by things like Heat Street and I guess Rebel Media too. I think the spin that Rebel Media puts on things is really sleazy. And it's the same thing with Trump. This is how Trump got elected. He was talking about things that nobody else wanted to talk about. And
that's
The fact that he was talking about them in a manner which is deplorable, and I actually agree with the use of that word, doesn't matter if they're the only one talking about it. And that's where you go to. That's where your vote goes to.
Yeah, and like I found it really interesting with that motion 103, how I was, you know, following it on the national. And I have a pretty healthy respect for the most part for our journalism here in Canada, but I was really disgusted by how it was painted as, oh, it's the conservatives or better chances. No.
No, it's not.
No, it wasn't just the conservatives.
It's a lot more than
it was,
conservatives.
You know,
I am not a conservative.
They just happened to be
vote.
The one in the debate that were, you know, and their accommodation was perfectly reasonable, you know, replacing the word Islamophobia with anti-Muslim bigotry. Completely reasonable concession.
Yep.
You know?
It was.
And to see the media.
Couldn't do that.
You know, sure, I've seen signs of it and stuff like that, but that one just kind of really struck me because,
they doubled down.
The conservatives.
They doubled down. And and there are many Muslims who are, as we mentioned previously and a few minutes ago, there are many Muslims who are against Motion 103 for that, the very use of that word Islamophobia. Because Islamophobia is a word that is designed, its intent is to stifle discussion of Islam.
Yeah.
And, you know, Christianity is just as bad in terms of its text. It's just that Christians have stopped taking it seriously a long time ago.
Well, and they still, Muslims what, not so what much. Is the word that they use for being, what do Christians say when they think they're being discriminated against and actually what they're just being curbed from enacting their
it's
bullshit.
Religious intolerance?
Persecuted.
Persecuted?
Persecuted. It's the equivalent, except...
That's true.
Islamophobia has got a more sinister, you know, background to it. If you
well,
look
sure,
at the
because it has
the late
a...
90s and the organizations that were, you know, putting that word out there as a propaganda tool.
Yeah.
Right. I had a discussion too with somebody on, you know, oh, well, you know, words emerge out of language because I was saying, well, it's a made up word and it's bullshit. Oh, well, you know, words emerge out of language. And I'm like, you know, there's one thing when words emerge organically out of a language versus being
designed, engineered.
Yeah. And. Yes, and then and propelled into popular culture as a mechanism of propaganda.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what that word is.
Freedom of slavery, though.
Yeah, no, I mean, everybody's against anti-Islamic bigotry.
Yeah,
unless they're
absolutely.
Fucking assholes, you know. But
it's a bait and switch, isn't it?
It's a bullshit.
It's a bait
exactly.
and switch.
Yeah.
I mean.
You're against the word Islamophobia. You're a racist. You're Islamophobe.
Yeah. It's exactly it. It's a bait and switch. You're actually criticizing Islam, but then all of a sudden they call you an Islamophobe. So it switches it to, you're just afraid of Muslims. Or you have a bigoted attitude towards Muslims. It's a total bait and switch.
Yeah. Well, it's designed to have that double meaning of the word.
Yes. And
you
that's
are you criticizing
exactly
Muslims
it.
Or are you criticizing the ideology?
Yeah.
And to conflate it so that you appear as racist when you're just... criticizing ideas.
Yeah. And then there's, you know, people like Majid Nawaz and Ayaan Hirsi Ali, who are apparently, according to the Southern Poverty Law Center, they're anti-Muslim extremists. It's just, I mean...
Imagine. Wow. I used to take...
That must have been a shock for Majid Nawaz.
Seriously.
You know,
what's up?
It must have been a shock for Majid Nawaz to hear that. Like, what? I'm Muslim.
And Sarah Hayter started that hashtag, count me in too, SPLC, or something like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Was that Sarah? Oh, yeah. We got to have her on sometime. Yeah.
Yeah. We have in the past, but we'll, again, would be nice.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, we did. Yeah. That's quite a while ago.
Yeah, because she's ex-Muslims of North America.
Yeah. And... so we finish with Conrad Black.
Shall we?
That great apologist for Nixon. So here's from the National Post.
I'm in jail, blathering on about morality. Yeah, fucking criminal.
Exactly. Felon. Was it? Yeah, I think it was a felony. I put Conrad Black. I put this as simply as possible. Many atheists are excellent, but atheism itself is hurting the West. Okay, you tell us why there, Conrad. It's pretty bad. There's a spot here. I'm going to find it. He said, I guess this is kind of a response to responses of his previous bullshit.
I read, and I've got those two up and not the other one. So
okay, this is a paragraph that I'll just read it. A quote from here. I made the point that the Enlightenment that produced what is commonly called the, quote, Age of Reason, unquote, started with a fusion of religious exuberance scientific and intellectual exploration, and artistic and literal originality, all of which elements essentially reinforced each other. No, they didn't. No, they didn't. A lot of them dumped the religious aspects of their lives. They had to. You can't come to Enlightenment values from religion. I'm sorry, you just can't. He continues, but the Enlightenment gradually adopted...
I don't know, Owens. That's not fair. That's not
fair. No, I think that's totally fair. How do you do it? How do you get there?
Because out of the Enlightenment era came sort of this humanistic scholarship and also post-preprinting press, right? Where people were encouraged for the first time in history to interpret scriptures themselves as opposed to it being, you know, top-down kind of thing, right? And so this resulted in some scholarship that sought to, you know, merge the wisdom of the Greeks, the ancient Greeks, and Christianity, and try to rid Christianity and the Bible of its corrupted claims that they felt had been part of history. So I would say that that's not necessarily atheist, but it is certainly secular.
Yeah, right? Well, the people like John Locke basically had to ignore their religious beliefs. They couldn't. That's what I, you know,
well,
that's
question it, right?
Hmm? What was that?
Question the religious. They had to question the religious.
Well, yeah, beliefs. They had to, and that's the thing. I just don't see how you can get really to Enlightenment values. I mean, there's certainly not biblical values.
No, but that's my point. That, you have to reject them altogether because part of that whole process was to try to make Christianity, I guess, more secular, essentially. That was, I think, the project. That was a dominant.
Well, that wasn't a goal, but because I don't think they knew where they were going. Yeah, but that's what happened. Yeah. It's potato, potato. We're kind of on the same page there. As he continues, but the Enlightenment gradually adopted the position that science, exploration, and reason are incompatible with religious faith. Damn straight it isn't. Although the Judeo-Christian tradition, the role of conscience, the practice of justice, mercy, and forgiveness, along with intellectual curiosity and initiative, are the overwhelmingly powerful formative force in our history. Who says that any of that belongs to religion?
Yeah, exactly. This ownership of morality by Christians these days, what's his name? Prager. Same argument.
Yeah, Prager, yeah.
Same shit, different day. You. It's like, this isn't even an argument. That's a... You know, when you said, oh, let's talk
it's
about this on the podcast, yeah. I'm like, oh, shit.
Seriously?
Because I, you know, got about two paragraphs into this pontification of a fucking tedious windbag asshole. And I'm like, oh, no. Now Randy's going to make me read the whole thing for this podcast.
Yeah.
And so I ended up all reading all three papers. And I'm just like, oh, he sounds like he should be standing on a street corner, except he's using big words, right?
Yeah, and he's also talking down to people.
Totally.
Montreal's Paul-Émile Cardinal Léger was generally acclaimed when he addressed the scientific and intellectual communities at the Second Vatican Council and described faith as, quote, this greatest friend of the human intelligence, unquote. Gag me with a spoon. No, that's my comment. Not there. But come on, really. Faith is the belief in things without the requisite evidence. It's not a friend of human intelligence. It's a denial.
You know, it's the greatest enemy of human intelligence, frankly.
I did not suggest that the probable existence of a supernatural intelligence required anyone to plunge into religious practice or worship of any kind. That is a matter of taste, and people should do what works for them and avoid what doesn't.
I'm just trying to shove Judeo-Christian Christianity down your throat. Yeah. That's where morality comes from. Like humans all of a sudden having some enlightened.
Like there was no morality that came from other things, like, you know, the ancient Greeks. I did not imply for an instant that those who deny the probability, I love how he says the probability, no, it's not probable, it's actually impossible, of a supernatural intelligence, whom I defined for these purposes as atheists, were incapable of being honest and decent people. Yeah, thanks, douchebag. Of course, in our society, most people, including most atheists,
I know. They're rapists, they're murderers, I'm sure some of them are good people.
That's basically what we're getting
from this.
Yeah, it's the same thing. Oh, some of my best friends are atheists. No, they're not. I doubt it.
The rapists are criminals, but I'm sure some of them are good people.
Yeah.
Of course, my best friends are atheists.
Of course, in our society, most people, including most atheists, are reasonably honest and decent and get through their lives without horrible outbursts of sociopathic behavior.
Well, thank you. Thank you for acknowledging that. That's very kind of you, sir.
I did write, here you're going to love this. I did write that those atheists who purport to espouse the Judeo-Christian life without admitting the probability of some supernatural force, are essentially enjoying the benefits of Judeo-Christian civilization while denying even the least onerous definition of its basic tenets.
That reminds me of the people that say, oh, you're borrowing from Christianity because you're using logic, and logic was like this thing that God apparently planted somehow. And like, you can't plant false claims into a syllogistic form to, you know, create pseudo-profound bullshit, like is exactly what's going on with this article.
You know, you completely forget about the Greeks and the Romans, you know.
Yeah.
They had pretty damn good societies, too. And,
Well, I don't know about that, but, you know, because there was slavery and, you know, women weren't exactly part of the, property, people that didn't own property and that kind of thing. But, yeah, some of these profound ideas.
Oh, yeah, like Judeo-Christian experience isn't totally patriarchal.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I think, well, you know, the piece I wrote recently and just essentially, no, it's not Christianity that brought. Bloody hell. The next thing we know, they're going to be saying, oh, gay marriage has been in the Bible all along. Hey,
yeah,
it's Christians.
Course.
That, you know,
of course they will.
Like, they just keep owning morality as though it's their domain and not a product of human evolution and the intersection of science to give us more compassionate views of, you know, we're not mechanistic, you know, things. We actually have feelings and not just humans. We're not special. I forgot what I was even ranting about. I got so ranty.
Happens.
It's just such a bullshit argument, and I'm so tired of it because.
Oh, yeah, I know. It's
like as though he's not presenting anything new. He's just calling atheists bad people, just like Prager, you know, make a big video around it and like sound like you're saying something new and provocative, and they're just not. And they're trying to claim morality as their own domain, and it's ridiculous. It's embarrassing.
Well, he says here that. From another piece, he said that exchange was some back and forth going on apparently in another feed. That exchange had the added flourish that Nazism was deemed by my correspondent to be a discernible outgrowth of Christianity, an unspeakable falsehood and defamation. No, it's not.
Oh, I saw that too.
No, it's not.
Yeah. How
I'm sorry.
Dare you hand wave away like that all the argumentation that precedes the bullshit you're spewing.
The Holocaust could not have happened in the absence of Christian anti-Semitism.
Yeah, and look,
could
look
not
at
have happened.
Like this guy is not ignorant of these facts, yeah. And it's just so shameful.
He's willfully ignorant.
Patronizing, moralizing, son of a bitch. You know, criminal, doing nothing but ad hominems, and so that's exactly what I'm doing back because.
Well, what's the point
he's
of
not
this?
Got an argument.
What's the point of this? Yeah. Does he want a theocracy?
I guess. And he used to be an atheist before he got thrown in jail and found Christianity. Ooh, that's really compelling for me to listen to this windbag.
Well, he couldn't have been an atheist for very good reasons if these arguments actually got him out of atheism.
Yeah, exactly.
There's so many. It's built on logical fallacies. Of course, there's always the fallacy of argument from ignorance and kind of implied affirming the consequent in you know, the whole it requires a god basically to have you know, supernatural intelligence is required for a universe, etc., and that's more probable than a natural I'm trying to figure out where that is. It's here it is. He says this: my contention is that it is more logical and reasonable to attribute these phenomena to the existence of a supernatural force or intelligence than either to deny that they exist or to take refuge in the faith. I love that, in the faith, that they are merely aspects of our environment that we will eventually understand as we explore our planet and the contiguous universe. It's an implied argument from ignorance. Okay,
it's totally William Lane Craig.
Yeah, it's BS. It's a lazy. It's
yeah.
I have the answer, so don't bother looking for any further. That's the laziness. Of theology. Yeah.
And I'm going to misrepresent science to say that, you know, something, everything must have had a cause. Well, we don't know that. Time began to exist, apparently. It's simply, you know, like, we don't know. It's such a painful and
frightening
answer.
Like, we don't
know. Have to make shit up.
Yeah. Somebody pointed out, go read Lawrence Krauss's A Universe from Nothing, which I thought was perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think we should wrap
this
up.
Yeah, I find it super tedious.
It's
been flogged again and again in recent, you know, maybe in the past few months or whatever, right?
He doesn't like us atheists, so.
Yeah.
I don't like him either. I mean, he's a criminal.
It's just so frustrating to see these arguments refuted again and again, and they grasp at straws, and they, you know, use slightly different words to say the same crap. and they have no argument. Like, I'd like an argument because that would be fun, and they're just not rising to the task.
Yeah, he's trying to sound intelligent, but all the while saying nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
So, there you go, Conrad. You're full of shit. There we go.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess...
Go back to jail.
Yeah, go back to jail.
Sorry.
Yeah, that how did he... Nice. Yeah, this is the guy that got... He renounced his Canadian citizenship so he could be knighted in Britain. What a narcissist.
Oh, yeah, that's right, too. Yeah.
Yeah, what a dude. Douche.
Yep.
So next week we have... next Sunday we have Cammie Ryan.
Cool.
From Monsanto. Ooh, scary kids. Yeah, so she's going to be on.
Shall we have an exorcist on hand?
Yeah. So we're going to be talking about presenting science to the public, and as well GMOs and other food-related skeptical items.
Cool.
So I look forward to that. So that's it for this week. It's time to go to bed. And I'll read before I go to sleep. I'm reading Lawrence Krauss right now. So
cool.
It's a very good book. So I highly, highly recommend it.
Excellent. I will check it out. But I'll probably actually wait till I get to see him personally so I can sign it when I buy it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I get mine over Amazon. That's a really nasty way to do things because I've got such a backlog of books. Because it's just so easy. I don't even have to get out of bed, right? You know, just order, click, done.
Yeah.
Okay.
I refrain because I know if I'm going to a conference, it'll probably be sold there. And
of course it will be. Yeah.
That's super cool. Yeah.
So great. So you have yourself a good week. Maybe. And everybody who's listening, have a great week. And next weekend is Easter, isn't it?
Thanks for listening.
None of us really cares.
Give anything up for Lent, Randy?
Religion? Up for Lent? Religion?
Cats, maybe?
No, not cats. No, unfortunately. Yeah, Lent. I saw an article on how to basically have fun during Lent. I'm like, isn't that kind of missing the point?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, those Catholics. All right. So next week, have yourself a good night.
You've been listening to the Legion of Reason coming to you from Calgary, Canada. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, please consider reviewing us on iTunes. Music was provided by Dean Morrison and Graham Hill and used with permission.